Buccaneers fans, happy new week here on the Ira Kaufman podcast, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richey, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. Lee D. Kemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. And there are monster savings, monster as in Halloween, $10,000 in discounts on in-stock new 2023 Ford F-150s and Lightnings at Bill Curry Ford. BillCurryFord.com, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Many other great specials too, and you can find them all at BillCurryFord.com. Always in effect is their nationwide lifetime warranty on new vehicles. And Sean Sullivan, the general manager of Bill Curry Ford, host of the Best in Class podcast at JoeBucksFan.com. He is our resident draft guru. Sean is always ready to hand you a $500 gift card, if you want to order a vehicle online through their concierge ordering service, which is really easy. Hundreds of people do it every week. This is not some sort of, unique situation. It's a great way to shop. And of course, the dealership itself is a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry. Sean is there. He'll give you the Ira Kaufman discount at any time. You just have to ask and you can find him and start shopping at BillCurryFord.com. Thank you, Florida's Elite Restoration, who helps present this podcast, floridaselite restoration.com. When you have a disaster in your home, you call them immediately, 24/7. Do not waste time. They will evaluate your property free. They'll come out, they'll bring all their technology and figure out, what kind of damage did that flood really do? How bad is this mold that you're starting to see? What's behind the wall? What's behind the curtain? And that's just one example: storm damage, fire, flood. They're licensed mold remediation specialists. When you make that first phone call to Florida's Elite Restoration, do yourself a favor and tell them you heard about it on the Ira Kaufman podcast, or you can mention JoeBucksFan.com. And if you need their services after you get a free evaluation, they'll give you $500. Maybe that's cash back for your deductible or just cash back because you're paying for them to restore your property. Florida's Elite Restoration.com, family owned. Owner Josh Martin's fantastic. Decades in the business with his team on the insurance adjuster side of things, so they know how to get your money, just like they did for Sean Sullivan, who gave a nice endorsement of Florida's Elite Restoration in his last podcast because Sean had to use them. Fantastic company. Big Storm Beer is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. We'll talk about them later, but they've got tap rooms in Odessa, Clearwater, upstairs in Centro Ybor, in Ybor City, in Cape Coral, and in Orlando at the Amway Center, not just for events, at all times. Lee, we've got an announcement to make. It's going to make a lot of people sad, but it also might make some people sit at the edge of their seats because they don't know what's going to happen. Ira is not here for this podcast. Did you believe this, Lee?
Well, the man has to have a day off once in a while. remember, Ira had to have two bye weeks. One of the bye weeks, he went to North Carolina, and even though he's colorblind, he wanted to see the changing colors of the trees. So Ira is a man of leisure. He needs his time off. He's getting up in years. It's sad but true, but that doesn't mean Ira's left us. He's only leaving Russo. He's still with us.
Ira announced that Mad Dog Russo, where he appears every Wednesday on SiriusXM Mad Dog Radio, this will be his last year doing that. He does a lot of prep work. Ira talks baseball there, music. He's talking hockey, whatever it is. A lot of football too, but Ira's going to be out after this season. But that doesn't matter now. We've done this podcast a few times without Ira Lee. I remember sitting at Hooters in South Tampa once with you. We did a long episode, and we've done it before. And we're not going to try to predict what Ira is going to say, but we're going to hit on some big issues, touch a little bit backwards into the game. We'll keep a lot of the meat and potatoes for when Ira rejoins us. Monday night, we'll probably get together with Ira and crank out another one. But Lee, I wanted to start here after this Sunday's games, which sort of has changed the landscape a little bit. I wanted to get your take on the state of the Bucks because right now, Atlanta, they lost in Tennessee, a game I watched. Will Levis looked like Dan Marino out there, came in. He was sharp, threw four touchdowns. I'm sure Team Glazer might have looked at that game and said, hey, why don't we get a young guy like that? I mean, he looked great. I get it. It's one game. But, the Falcons looked almost as bad as they did against the Bucks in some ways. And Taylor Heinicke came in, sparked them quite a bit. It looks like the shift has been made. He came in after halftime for Desmond Ridder, and who knows what's going on there, but they lost. The Saints won decisively. They won going away in Indianapolis. Was a close game, but they pulled away one by about 10 points. So both of those teams sit at 4-4. Carolina knocked off Houston, who the Bucs play next, and the Vikings won, and they went to 4-4, but now they lost their starting quarterback, and the Bucs own them with the tiebreaker, and the Vikings still have to play the Saints and the Falcons. Lee, a lot of Bucs fans are depressed after three consecutive losses, but they're obviously still in this thing in a huge way. What are your thoughts on where they sit as far as the playoff race goes?
Well, it's good that obviously that other teams are stubbing their toes, just like the Bucs. The Bucs obviously took a major hit, if you believe these playoff projections. There's various playoff projections out there, and the Bucs took a big hit, losing both to Atlanta and Buffalo. They're still in it, clearly. I feel a little bit better the way the game ended Thursday night than the way the game was progressing. That may sound weird, but at one point in that game, I was absolutely outraged at what I was watching. But the way the game ended, I was like, oh, shucks. You know, I wasn't really upset. I mean, I was bummed out they lost, but I wasn't upset. And first half, I was upset the way they were playing. I know that sounds weird, but I just didn't come away with this burning anger that I did when they lost to the Falcons. But if you believe these playoff projections, the Bucs took a major hit. One playoff projection has the Bucs at a 15% chance to get to a wild card. Forget the division, just get to a wild card. And New York Times has them like at 38%, less than the Saints. Of the division teams, NFC South teams, they have the Bucs at number 3 as far as probability of making a playoff game. So, you know, the Bucs are painting themselves in a hole. I'm the one that wrote the stories that, hey, the season's not over with yet. Bucs lost 3 in a row last year, still made the playoffs. There are several teams that made the playoffs last year that lost 3 in a row or more than 3 in a row. But as I pointed out in both stories, every one of those teams had a franchise quarterback. I don't think we can say that about Mayfield yet. And the Bucs have played 7 games. Do you think Mayfield's going to be a franchise quarterback? You know, a guy that can carry the team? Kind of a stretch in my eyes, only based on what I've saw through 7 games. Mayfield's better than what I thought, but can he put the Bucs on his back? I don't know. And that's the difference from last year. All those teams that lost 3 in a row, whether it be Jaguars, Dolphins, the Bucs, all of them had franchise quarterbacks. All of them had quarterbacks you could trust. All of them had quarterbacks that you could bank on. I don't know if Mayfield's that guy. So I don't know if this 3-game losing streak is fatal for the Bucs because of lack of a franchise quarterback, or they're just lucky to be playing in such a trash division.
You know, I don't give much stock to the playoff projections until January, because that's when the math tightens up. Right now, it's really just a joke. Of course, you're going to have slim chance to make a wild card now because there's like 9 teams still in it. So they're all part of the equation. The division is the division. The Bucs have played one less game. If the Bucs were to beat Houston on Sunday, then the Bucs would, in theory, be tied with Atlanta and New Orleans, and they'd be right behind Atlanta with a tiebreaker edge because conference record would come into play. But again, these teams haven't all played each other. So to me, the projections are nonsense until the math tightens up late and you got teams that are eliminated. That's just my personal thought on that. As far as the losing 3 in a row, yes, I can't call Mayfield the franchise quarterback. No way, not yet. But also, he got them to 3-1. So you could sort of look at the teams last year that were 3-1. What did they do? And you know that those projections for a 3-1 team are pretty high to make the playoffs. And most of the teams that went 3-1 had a franchise quarterback. So it's all like how you want to look at it. Then from the negative angle, the positive angle, it'll make you crazy. What drives me nuts, and while I wouldn't root for an injury for anybody, I don't like it at all, Kirk Cousins being lost for the season, that's a blow in the sense that the Saints and the Saints and Falcons haven't played them yet. And we have. Now, we beat them, but I was really counting on the Vikings to knock off the Saints and Falcons, and that's going to be a lot harder now.
And that really hurts the Bucks' chances. Like you said, you don't want to see anybody, you know, get hurt like that. And Cousins, in some NFL circles, people were wondering, would that guy wind up with the Bucks next year? Now, who knows where he's going to play, if he's going to play, you know? So that sucks for Minnesota fans, sucks for the Bucks, and that is a big blow. Now, in the big picture, it's going to help the Bucks because you think the Vikings are going to take a step or two back. But like you said, they haven't played the Falcons or Saints. We were kind of hoping that the Vikings would knock them off, and now the chances of that happening have lessened because of Cousins' injury.
And, you know, ironically, another team that just lost three in a row is the 49ers. That kind of plays into the your angles of the who's losing three in a row. And the Packers have lost four in a row. The Bucs still have to play them, and they obviously stink. So that's kind of good news. But let me throw this to you, Lee, because I know that you said what a lot of Bucs fans have said, and I think it goes back to the lost decade, the pain of all the losing. You said the Bucs haven't lost the season yet. The yet part of it is a hard thing to say when the team is 3-4 and they're right in it, but it just goes back to, like, you almost expect them to lose. I don't, but a lot of fans are still in that mindset. I know the three-game losing streak certainly helps. Put anybody there, but I want to throw this out there. The Bucs are 3-4. They haven't played the AFC South yet. So I think they can go 2-2 against the AFC South without a lot of anybody saying, wow, they went 2-2 against the AFC South. I think they got two wins there. And I still think they can go 3-1 in the division, beating Carolina a couple times and beating the Saints in Tampa. I still think they can do that. Maybe they lose to the Falcons in their second meeting. So that's five wins. That takes them to 8. And then the question is, can they beat Green Bay in Green Bay? I think they can do that. I'm not sure they can knock off San Francisco or and I think that would be it. That would be the season right there. So I still think 9 games is very much in their picture. Do you agree with that?
They could do it, but there's some warning signs coming out of that Buffalo game that spook me. The first one is the lack of fundamentals. You know, Bowles said after Thursday night's loss that they couldn't go into a more fast-paced offense because they kept racking up penalties. You're 7 games into the season, and you're making stupid mistakes like illegal procedure and crap like that, which is just, that's just mental. You don't know what the snap count is, and that's just an example. So like 7 games in, you can't run a quicker paced offense when you need to, by the way, and they needed to in the fourth quarter because, what, your players are too dumb that they're making mistakes? They haven't been coached up? What? I mean, that to me is a major red flag because there are times in a game, forget a season, there are times in a game where you need to be fast-paced, whether it was like the Bucks, they were playing catch-up, whether it was certain defenses you're going to face, that a quicker-paced offense would take advantage of certain things. That just 7 games in, and after a bye week, and you can't kick up an offense quicker because you're going to get penalties? Really huge red flag there.
It was a big red flag for a couple of reasons. I sort of have different reasons. One, because does that mean Todd Bowles nixed the hurry up? Like, did he like say to Canales, look, we got too many penalties when we go hurry up, don't do it. That would be sort of a big step by Todd Bowles, who says he doesn't get involved in the offense like that. So that's a nuance that I would love to know the answer to. I don't know if we'll get the truth, but that could be. Rich Gannon spoke, the former NFL MVP quarterback, faced the Bucks in the Super Bowl, 20 plus years ago. Gannon was on Sirius XM NFL radio, and he was saying that the game, it felt obvious to him that Canales, as a new play caller, was getting the play in a little bit too slow. And he said, when you get it in a hair too slow, especially if you're trying to go up tempo, what happens is your players, when they're approaching the line of scrimmage, they're thinking a little too much and it's loud. And maybe they have to like say it to themselves again. And sometimes they're just not as confident approaching the line of scrimmage and they make mistakes. And he said, you know, just those couple of seconds can be a big difference for a play call coming in and what the offensive line is thinking and players and confidence. It was an interesting take. He just felt that the game reeked of Canales not having a ton of experience. So take that for what it's worth. But what I think doesn't make sense from what you mentioned, Lee, is that opening day in Minnesota, crazy atmosphere, good team, loud. The Bucks had no false starts and very few penalties, and they were excellent with the communication and moving quickly and doing what they had to do. Yet here they were in Buffalo, and Luke Getteke's got three false starts, and you know, Todd Bowles said what he said is that, you know, they can't play fast because the penalties start to come out.
Yeah, that's just weird. And Gannon's point, it sounds like it makes sense. And we've heard Canales say more than once, like, hey, you know, I'm still learning as a play caller. And so that might be one nuance, as you would say, that Canales is still getting the handle on. The other thing that spooks me about what Bowles said Friday morning, day after the game, you know, he was defending Ryan Neal quite a bit. And about a month ago, he did the same thing, only his answers were different. And they made sense, you know, where he was defending Ryan Neal, and he said, hey, if just one of our blitzers does his job and gets to the quarterback, or one of our edge rushers gets to the quarterback, we're not talking about Ryan Neal. And I think Bowles is accurate when he says that. However, it sounded to me like the way he was talking about coverages, and he was asked, why are you using Carlton Davis, Jamel Dean in a zone so much, because they're better at man-to-man? I interpreted Bowles' response was, those guys are covering for other secondary players, other defensive backs who can play zone, but they can't play man. Did you get the same vibe that I got?
Yeah, what he basically said was, we can't play more man, and I'd love to have Dean and Davis in man coverage, but if you play man, everybody's got to play man, and we have some guys that may not be the best in man. So it was kind of like they're not covering, but he was like, you know, if they go four wide, well, that leaves, it felt like he was saying that puts us with two guys in coverage who aren't very good at man coverage. It was a weird answer because ultimately Bowles' defense revolves around lots of blitzes and lots of man coverage, and the Bucks just aren't very good at zone. That's not anything new. Yeah, it was just a strange answer when you're paying these guys massive money as a cornerback duo. They have no interceptions, and you are hesitant to play man with them. It's like you're missing some pieces, or it was just an excuse. I don't know. It was strange.
Well, it was strange on two levels. One, you touched upon it. You're paying these guys big money, but you're not using them to their strengths. So that's wasted money. You know, I'm sure the Blazers are interested in that. Number two, who was picking the defensive players? What I mean by that is, when they sat down to figure out the roster of the final 53, I'm going to guess that Bowles has the final say. So if these guys couldn't do what he wants them to do, why did he keep them? Why didn't he tell Jason Light to go out and get some new guys? Didn't make sense to me. It's like, wait a minute, who's picking this team? If you got guys out there who can't do what you want to do, why did you keep them? Why didn't you just throw them on the sidewalk? Why didn't you trade them? You know, why didn't you go out and get some different players?
For me, is you could argue the Bucks can't play zone. So if you, yeah, you know, you're foregoing man coverage and you can't play zone, then you're sort of, you got some serious issues. And of course, the Bucks are among the worst teams in the league right now in yards allowed. They've tightened up in the red zone with their defense, and they've generated a tremendous percentage of turnovers compared to the rest of the league. But overall, down in and down out defense hasn't been very good, and the run defense hasn't snapped back to the, you know, top five level that they were looking for. So I don't know. I mean, the covering for Ryan Neal goes on. You know, one guy who we were lucky enough to get some cool video from our photographer on the scene, fans got to hear at JoeBucksFan.com, Richard Sherman, you know, blasting Dean right on the field, his good friend, telling a man, you know, go make a play. You already got paid. You got the big money. Go for it. And Rondé Barber had blasted him on the Buccaneers radio network after the Lions game, saying, man, he left a pick six on the field. I would have caught it myself and taken it to the house. And that's really what happened with Dean. And it was more glaring where, you know, he just went to bat the ball down when he was in position. He didn't make a play on the ball. And he's one of the fastest guys on the field. That would have been a 100-yard pick six. On fourth and one in the second quarter could have changed the whole game. I don't know. They just need to get more out of these guys because the offense is so bad. It just keeps coming back to that. Because the offense sucks, they need every big play they can get. And while they're getting their share, they just need more on defense, which isn't fair, but that's where we are.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. I kind of thought that when Dean, and it was pretty clear, he was more concerned about knocking it down than picking it. And I'm guessing it's been drilled into him You know, if you're going to go for the pick, you better damn well make sure you get it and not miss it and winds up being 6 points the other way. So I think it's just been drilled into him, like, you know, you make sure that guy doesn't get a touchdown. So that's part of it. And like you said, it keeps going back to the offense, and that puts pressure on the defense, meaning the defense doesn't have much margin for error. But what we're talking about, speaking of margin for error, and this is why I wrote the Bucs are a bad team. You know, of course, I used the famous Bill Parcells quote, "You are what your record says you are." But the Bucs have so many elements, plays. It's just you don't see good teams doing this. You know, the one that sticks out like a sore thumb is you bring your field goal unit on and you take a delay of game. I've never seen that. Have you ever seen a good team do that? No. And the penalties and you just don't see good teams do what the Bucs do. It's just that first half, it seemed like everything was a struggle. Every first down was a struggle. A mighty mission to climb that mountain to get, you know, a first down. Just so many things the Bucs do that you just don't see good teams do. And those little things add up to losses. And that's why I wrote, right now the Bucs are not a good team. Yeah, their record says 3-4. That's not a good team. But just the way they play, it's just, it sort of reminds me of the 2010, I think the year was, when Josh Freeman and the Bucs, they played pretty well, but whenever they played a good team, they would lose. And that's what the Buffalo game looked like to me. Every decent thing they did, it was like a struggle. It was like this massive effort just to do one thing right. And this, it just does not look, does not feel like a good team. And then, of course, the record shows they're not a good team, 3-4.
They don't look like a Super Bowl contender. They've got holes. I mean, I don't look at it in the same dark kind of way because most of the league is not a good team when you look at it in that way. You know, there's only a handful of good teams, and they're definitely not one of them. But are they a top seven team in the NFC? Are they a playoff team? Maybe. I can't say Atlanta's better than they are, or the Saints are better than they are, or the Vikings and all that. So it's all kind of relative, but no, I mean, this is not good football that they're playing, and they're not certainly not stringing together complete games. And look, the offense is completely disjointed, and the defense has its share of issues, and that field goal thing didn't bother me as much as you, but Bowles' reaction, which was things, quote, he said, quote, discombobulated. I was like, what is that? You know, I mean, if you don't want to attempt a 59-yard field goal, that's okay. No one's going to yell at you. You know, maybe your kicker says he doesn't have it or whatever, even though the guy just kicked a 57-yarder. It's a little bit weird. Lee, Big Storm Beer, it's fantastic. It's locally brewed. They're locally owned. 11 years now, Big Storm Brewing Company. They've grown from a tiny little Pasco Clearwater company to all across the Tampa Bay area and way beyond. And the beers are fantastic. You should try them. You can find out where to buy them at bigstormbrewery.com. They have a storm tracker. You punch in your zip code. They'll tell you what brands are available, what, you know, beers are out there nearby. They have their spirits as well, award-winning. So just get to the website, bigstormbrewery.com. You'll see all the menus for the tap rooms. They're all a little bit different. And they've got great events going on at the Ybor City tap room and in Clearwater and Odessa as well. Each one has its own social media page out there, so you can look those up and follow them. And just Big Storm is really, really good, and a lot of good gift buying opportunities coming up here with their spirits and the holidays. BigStormBrewery.com. Lee, Rashad White. Okay, now look, it's not even 2 days to get a running back here in here. Now, some fans were excited. You know, White had, I think it was a 14-yard run called back, holding by Trey Palmer. He actually had a 15-yard run in the second quarter. He ran out of the shotgun, and then it was a two-minute warning, and fans were losing their mind. They had that whole timeout to just think that the world had changed. But after that, he really didn't do very much, and he finished with, I believe it was 9 carries for 38 yards. He had great stats in the passing game. I believe it was 7 catches for 77 yards. Some signs of life, but you know, ultimately it was just a very average day for a NFL running back, and the Bucs needed a lot more. You know, your thoughts on White?
He gave us a glimmer of hope. You know, I was like, okay, is he finally turning the corner? And I remembered what Dave Canales has been saying on a weekly basis. It takes time to develop the run game. It takes time. So I started to wonder, okay, is this what Canales is saying? Have we finally reached that point? Has White finally turned the corner? Is he starting to look like an NFL running back? And when I start to think that, I also remember that Buffalo has a really bad rush defense, and they're missing quite a few guys on defense, including Matt Milano, who's a very good linebacker. So I don't know if what we saw, the little bit that we saw from White, I don't know if that's actually him starting to turn the corner and the Bucs' run game starting to turn the corner, or was that just because they were taking advantage, the little bit that they did, they were taking advantage of a bad run defense. I guess we won't know the answer to that for another week or two.
I mean, I get why they try to set low expectations for the fans out of the gate, but why does it take, everything seems to take a long time. I mean, this is game 8 coming up against Houston. I mean, stop it. You know, look at Indianapolis, all right? They get Jonathan Taylor back, but before they got him back, they had Zach Moss running wild. Today against the Saints, a good defensive front, a team the Bucs couldn't run on. I mean, they went for 164 yards on 24 carries today. I mean, that's nearly 7 yards a carry against the Saints. They lost, but not every team should need all this time to develop an average running game. And I'll ask you flat out, do you think they make a deal for a running back? Even if that means signing a guy off somebody's practice squad that they kind of liked through the preseason, or you know, somebody's third string running back that they like, do you think we get a new running back in here at the trade deadline late Tuesday afternoon?
Well, I never thought about pulling someone off the practice squad. And I always joke with people, oh, you're getting someone else's leftovers. You know, guy wasn't good enough to make the final roster, but he'll come in and he'll be the answer. I would put that at 50-50. When, I don't know, but it would not surprise me. I've never thought about it, so I haven't put a lot of thought into it. I'm going to say no, they're not going to make a trade. The Bucs have a habit, history. I'm not just talking this year. I'm talking about, you know, back when Dirk Cutter was here, back when Raheem Morris was here. They fall in love with their own guys. Hey, we drafted this guy. We think he's going to do this. We'll give him every damn opportunity there is in the world, rather than just facing facts like, okay, this guy sucks, let's move on. So I predict no, they won't go out and trade, because that bruises their ego.
What scares me, Lee, is, you know, the standard instant thought is that fans would think, you know, I as a fan would do the same thing. Oh, we need an upgrade from Rashad White, you know, make him the number two back, get somebody in here who they can give a shot for the number one running back. What mostly scares me is the lack of depth at running back.
Oh, there is none.
And because if Rashad White, we don't even know if he can get through a full season, he's healthy, you know, good for him. But if he got hurt, well, basically the Bucs have nothing behind him, nothing. Keyshawn Vaughn has had some chances this year, nothing. And, you know, Chase Edmonds hasn't done it yet. I mean, first game back, he missed some opportunities in this game. And Sean Tucker, undrafted rookie, obviously they demoted him. I mean, Rashad White is going to get a lot of touches in the passing game, and he's had two really good strong games in a row catching the football. And if they lean on him there, his touches, his numbers are going to go up. That increases the odds of him getting hurt. And it just feels like at least make a deal for a number two or a number three running back. You know, it doesn't have to be. Just put somebody behind Rashad White, because if he gets hurt in, you know, after Thanksgiving, I mean, what do they got? Nothing. It's just I hope the ego doesn't come into it. If they don't make a deal, it's just because they didn't find anyone they like. But I think you got to get somebody in here.
Well, the thing that a lot of people, and myself included at times, we overlook with the running game, this is, guess who it's really hurting? It's hurting Mayfield. You know, no one expected Mayfield to come in and be Brady. No one. You know, Mayfield, there's no sober person that thought that Mayfield could be Brady. They thought Mayfield could come in, maybe be an average quarterback, not make mistakes, put the team in position to win. But to do that, they needed the run game. Well, Mayfield has no run game to lean on. So what are teams doing? They're not worried about the Bucs' running game. I read a couple stories where, I think it was Brian Baldinger, excuse me, on Twitter, he said that Buffalo hardly ever put six guys in a box. They're worried about the pass. Well, Mayfield, as we talked about earlier, he's not a franchise quarterback yet. I guess he could be still, but he's not there yet. And if they're focusing to shut him down, well, your SOL is an offense. Without run game.
Well, I promise I'm as sober. I'm sober, but I did think that Mayfield could be as good as Tom Brady was last year, because I don't think Tom Brady was that great. And but the crazy thing is that the run game is significantly worse this year.
Yes.
At least, you know, last year it gets lost a little bit, but Fournette had the majority of the carries. You know, White had a very healthy number and made, I think it was 9 starts or 10 starts. But either way, Fournette as a second running back last year was way better than what they have now. And, you know, so Mayfield comes in with a worse running game, believe it or not, than what Brady had. And you're right, it does sort of stunt everybody's ability to evaluate Mayfield when he's coming into the worst running game in the NFL. I mean, what do you expect him to do? You could almost say that he's done a hell of a job with 10 touchdowns and 4 picks and scrambling better than he ever has in his career, you know, with what he's had to work with from the running game standpoint.
That's a very good point. He may be exceeding what people thought he could do, because there's no run game to speak of.
Yeah, the Trask mob would have come out crazy if Mayfield didn't lead that really long drive, 20-something plays to squeak out a touchdown there toward the end. And then the Bucs did a very nice job managing their drive late to set up the Hail Mary. I think that gets lost a little bit. I mean, I was proud of the offense for, you know, just being so precise in getting themselves to a point where they could even throw that pass. And what we'll close on, Lee, for this podcast, and hey, look, we've gone 30-something minutes without Ira. Unbelievable. Maybe we don't need the Sage anymore. Maybe we don't need him anymore.
Don't say such things.
No, we're just teasing. The Sage is a vital part of all things fun on the planet, especially in the Tampa Bay area. The Sage, of course, all of his work is presented by Bill Curry Ford. Tampa's first family of Ford is Bill Curry Ford. I'm going to close on this, Lee, because the Hail Mary, all the chatter, it's got me going insane. Everybody is focused on the penalties. You know, Kate Otten got mugged. Chris Godwin probably got hit. Mike Evans got, you know, interfered with it. But what gets forgotten is that if you watch the replay, very clearly, Mike Evans grabs a defender, flings him to the side with two hands, basically throws the guy out of the club, looked like a bouncer, threw him out of the club. If they were really calling penalties, they would have called probably 3 on the play, and one of them would have been against Mike Evans for offensive pass interference or holding, and the whole thing would have been redone. So you can bitch all you want about the Bucs getting screwed there, but go watch it. Mike Evans grabs a guy, throws him out of the way with two hands before the ball even arrives. So, and this happens on all these, you know, last minute throws. And I get the NFL has a big problem with not officiating a play, but if they really were officiating it, in my opinion, it would have just been a do-over.
Well, that Hail Mary play, to reinforce what you were saying, I had said earlier in this podcast that I was really outraged in the first half with the Bucs. I mean, just really. I mean, I was going bananas at home watching it. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I just thought that was just a piss poor effort. I thought guys were laying down. Joe Tryon, Shoyanka. You know, I just couldn't believe what I just did. The whole first half, the way the Bucs played, just really stunk. It reeked of Raheem Morris days. It reeked of Mike Smith days. It was just terrible. But the way they finished that game, and I was thinking this at the time. I said, "Son of a gun! If they would have caught that Hail Mary, no one would have thought of how bad they played in the first half. That would all be buried, man. Everybody be on such a high. Everybody be celebrating. Everybody be talking playoffs again. That one play, had Godwin been able to catch that, and I know Dante Stallworth was on Twitter saying that wasn't his responsibility. Well, he had the best chance. Had he caught that, that could have changed the whole freaking season. And I know I caught hell for putting this out on Twitter and writing this up in a story. If the Bucs miss out on the playoffs by one game, that play is going to haunt me like Kellen's Winslow getting jobbed on offensive pass interference against the Lions that cost the Bucs a playoff berth. That's going to haunt me the same way.
Yeah, that was in 2010, of course. That was brutal. Brutal offensive interference call. I got to say, the Dante Stallworth thing, I mean, that was the biggest joke I've ever seen. There's no coach in the NFL, there's no player who's coached to be standing in the end zone and not turn his back toward the ball. And Godwin turned late. As Keyshawn Johnson and Michael Irvin explained, his job would have been to turn when he got to the goal line. He turned a yard and a half late. That's it. I mean, he turned too late. Doesn't mean he would have caught it. Doesn't mean the defender wouldn't have turned with him and all that. But I don't know what Stallworth was talking about. I mean, the guy, you can't have your back to the ball. Nobody's coached to do that. So
I've never heard that before. Yeah,
it was weird. I got to defend the Bucs in the first half, Lee. I got to defend them. Yes, they got off to a slow start, but you know what? They came back. They got the field goal and they got the quick touchdown. And next thing you know, it was 10-10. And it was a ball game, you know, 17-10 at halftime. I thought they survived the first half in a hostile environment. I'm not saying they played well, but I thought the comeback began, you know, in that second quarter.
The defense did something. And of course, it what I read, I think I wrote a story about this, but it was all about Buffalo. It wasn't so much the Bucs. Buffalo was the first team in like 50 years in the NFL that started their drives at midfield for four consecutive drives. They started at midfield and they actually went backwards, not forwards. Something, some really weird stat. And I'm like, well, who the hell was playing defense? You know, what in Buffalo was screwing up? It's like, well, the Bucs were forcing them to do that, you know, because the Bucs were playing good defense in the second half. So I can't remember the specifics of that off the top of my head. It was all like, oh, how terrible Buffalo was. You know, they were terrible because the defense forced them to play terrible.
Congrats to the defense for forcing Buffalo to punt on their last four drives. I mean, and they were trying to close it out, and they were trying to get first downs. They weren't playing prevent and or prevent offense, and they couldn't do it. So, you know, that was a great upswing for the defense there. And, you know, you got a lot of people yelling at Dave Canales. You should have hurried up on that last drive, 7-minute drive. You know, it could have been 6.5 minutes. You would have had more time. I'm not disagreeing with any of that. But that is on the head coach who's in the headset and can say, Dave, call these plays 7 seconds faster. We're going to need this time. Do it or I'll do it. That is on Todd Bowles no matter what. And it was a failure there.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Bowles, I thought, summed up why they weren't going quicker on that 7-minute drive. And he said they were getting too many flags when he did try to pick up the pace. And like I said, that's just, there's 7 games in. That's really uncalled for.
Yeah, it's just a weird, weird response. And you know what? We'll leave it on that weirdness because that's what this Bucs season is. Although it's kind of what everybody projected it to be, which is a middle of the pack season. All they got to do now is go out and beat a Houston team that's 3-4. That isn't very good, but that has some talent, a very beatable. And if the Bucs go 4-4. You know, we can all take a deep breath. If they go 3-5, then we can all start saying, where's our Will Levis? You know, where's our young guy to come out there and light it up? And we may get it, you know, Kyle Trask may eventually get his shot if they drop 4 or 5 in a row. But we don't want to think about that. Although it would be fun to see what Trask could do, but you know, maybe that's for next year. All right, Lee, I'll give you Ira's closing thought. You have you want to say goodbye to the good fans or soothe them or fire them up with something? What do you got?
Well, I got to go after an advertising executive, and I don't know the name of the company. I don't know who thought up this ad, but I'm watching football like all red-blooded American men on Sunday, the 1 o'clock game, and there's a commercial where the people in the commercial are doing some Broadway skit, and 95% of red-blooded American males don't give a shit about Broadway. They've never been to Broadway, will never go to Broadway, don't give a damn about musicals. And here was this ad, clearly targeted for men because of colon cancer, that the joys of crapping in a box to check if you have colon cancer or not. What the hell? You're doing a musical about that? I'm just appalled and outraged that I'm trying to watch it. I'm trying to enjoy a game. I'm shoving my face with a chicken tender sub from Publix and drinking a Big Storm beer. And I'm watching dudes do a dancing skit, a musical skit about crapping in a box to see if you got cancer.
That wasn't how I thought you were going to end this podcast, Lee, but I'll take it. And, you know, I think that's the Cologuard commercial. Yeah. where then you after you finish your dance and your duty, if you will, you drive off to the post office or they pick it up from you. And it's just weird. Yeah. I guess they're looking for a cut. I don't know. Yeah. The ad executive there needs a slap in the face.
I mean, what's that? The same ad executive that ran Budweiser Light or Bud Light's campaign. I mean, come on.
All right. Well, look, the Sage will be back soon. He's fine. You can bother him on Twitter at iKaufman76 on X if you want to harass him a little bit. But he's good. He'll be out patrolling One Buck this week, and we'll be back.